This evening, as we begin our study, last week was on prayer. This evening is on purity. And it may be something that we don't think about very often, but it is on purity and how purity not only flows from worship, but purity is reflected oftentimes in worship. Tonight we'll be looking briefly at Psalm 24 and also Ephesians 5, verses from those. And by the way, the word in Hebrew that we translate into English, which actually comes from a Greek word, which means sacred songs, psalms, the word in Hebrew is actually tehillim, which means the prayers. The prayers. And so these songs, these poems are, and if you think about it, they are very often prayers. And we find that Psalm 24 is part of a section focusing of the Psalms, focusing on King David and the royal traditions that are associated with his dynasty, especially those traditions as they are related to spiritual situations of worship and obedience. And note the order. Worship and obedience to help us live lives of purity. What do you think of when you hear the word purity? Okay. Untainted. Silver and gold. Without flaws. Okay. White as snow. Unfortunately, sometimes in the city, the snow gets dirty, right? Any other things you think about when you think about purity? Spotless? Okay. Your lesson writer, really, it's kind of an interesting story to begin with, talking about an episode of Hoarders when you start talking about purity. And in that particular situation, that particular show, I think probably the biggest thing wasn't just that people were hoarding important things, but that couple was hoarding what? Trash. They hadn't taken the trash out in a year. Can you imagine the filth? I think after a while, even the roaches would be afraid to go in. But all the filth and the trash and all that kind of stuff. And the point is that if we're not careful, trash can enter and fill our lives. And sometimes we kind of get used to it being around without really thinking about it. One writer said, and I quote, "Slavery to sin doesn't occur overnight." Now, sin might, but not slavery to sin. He goes on, "It is a process of hoarding evil thoughts, attitudes, and actions over a long period of time. The Bible's call to purity is the antidote to pursuing purity from sin in an impure world." End of quote. What are some of the ways that some of the things in our world that are tempting or tempt people away from purity? Drugs. What are some of the sources? Drugs, drug dealers? Okay, people that you're around that don't use the same kind of language that you do. Or, I was thinking when Paul mentioned the drugs, I was talking with some folks recently about purity and used this example and asked the question, what are some of the sources of temptation that can lead you to impure thoughts or impure actions? And almost immediately, these were college students, one of them said, "Friends you hang around with." I said, "Well, are they really friends if they lead you there? But I get what people you hang around with." And in particular, this person said, "Yeah, I hate being the only one that's sitting around drinking a straight Coke when everybody else is doing all this other stuff, and they're saying, come on, just one, just one, just one. Of course, it kind of reminds me of the guy, I think I've told some of you before about the guy who, with whom I was in seminary, who felt called to minister with alcoholics in the gutters and had never had a drink in his life. And so he was asking one day, we were sitting around in the common area there, and he was asking some of the guys, he said, any of you guys know anybody that can take me somewhere to a bar where I can just get absolutely so drunk I pass out? I got to at least know what it feels like in order to minister. I thought, I'm not sure you need to go down that road. sometimes friends or other people get us into those kinds of things. Where are other sources of temptation for impurity, impure thoughts and all that kind of stuff? Media. And it's not just movies.
Internet.
Absolutely. I cringe regularly when you see the picture of somebody on TV and it says, local clergy person or local youth worker or local, and I'm thinking, okay, did it start on the internet or something else? It's not just the movies. It's not just the TV shows, not just HBO. Or, we don't get that anymore, but, because I'm not going to pay for it. HBO and Cinemax and all these other kinds of things. I'd rather pay for the hunting channel, the outdoor channel. But, give me a break. Anybody in here? Time for confession. We'll keep it within these four walls. Do you buy one of those big Hardee's thick burgers stacked up with all this stuff because of the scantily clad women that are eating that thick burger? Yeah. Well, but not on. Well, you know. Paul won.
Jerry boycotted them.
Do what?
Jerry boycotted them when they started doing those advertisements.
One of them was Paris Hilton.
Well, no, and that's the thing, being used in that fashion. And do you really believe that they go around eating those big burgers like that?
Well, they'll turn around and burger.
That's what they're going to do. As soon as the camera's off, they're going to turn around and spit it out. Yeah.
Well, if you notice, they actually don't take the bite of it.
Yeah.
And when he
pulled my hat, they right. But, well, you know, I wasn't going to say Jim sitting there with his binoculars saying that. Did she really take a bite out of that burger? Or, how many of you guys buy the whatever brand of t-shirts or underwear because the guy is out there scantily clad and buff?
I don't think anybody missed that.
Yeah, but the point here is that it's all around. It's not just the movies. It's not just the internet. It's not just the people that might say, well, let's go to, oh, try it just one time.
Oh.
Yeah, and got the big burger. But you got it in the commercial, the food commercial. Yeah. Well, and that's part of the thing in our impure world. So there's sources of temptation everywhere. There's sources of temptation everywhere, and you know we end up having to look at those kinds of things. Now, Psalm 24 speaks of worship. It centers around God as creator of everything, right? And this particular psalm there, scholars are divided whether it was written at the time of the capture of Jerusalem or, as I think is more likely, at the time when the Ark of the Covenant in 2 Samuel 6 is brought from Kiriath Jearim to Jerusalem. And here it, but here it centers on God as creator and then asks two rhetorical questions. Who may ascend? Notice it doesn't say who can. It said who may. Who may ascend the hill of the Lord? Now, what does he mean by here by the hill of the Lord? What do you think? The mountain in Jerusalem. Yes, the Temple Mount, where the temple was located. So it starts out with a proper perspective of God and then as a foundation for purity. And then asks the question, who may ascend the hill of the Lord? Followed by, who may stand in his holy place? Here in these verses, when it speaks of God, even before that, it's borrowing imagery from Genesis 1. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it, for he founded it upon the seas and established it upon the waters. And so that reflects back, okay, Genesis. Genesis chapter 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And then God created light, and we can't make it or save it. I was just glad that Sydney and Sierra. I was about to say Crystal, and I said, that's not right. Sydney and Sierra both shook their heads that they didn't believe I could save light. So I was wondering, though, today. I really thought this morning. I said, if I have a whole bunch of kids, I wonder if any of them will say yes. And I'm going to give them a dollar if they do. But here, you know, it goes back to Genesis and the whole idea of the sovereignty of God. God is the founder of everything, of all that there is, not just people, but of all that there is, the world in which we live, etc. And this kind of proper understanding and worship of God is meant to enable us to live lives in gratitude as God would have us to do, which is more pure. But purity is not a set of legalistic regulations. You can't legislate morality. You really can't. People try. They even tried in major Islamic countries, and they can't legislate morality because I've known folks to go over there, soldiers to go over there, and said that some of the more wealthy guys, because you know it's capital offense crime to be caught publicly drinking if you're a Muslim. But some of the more wealthy guys end up getting passes to the officers' club and places like that. So purity is not just a set of legalistic regulations. It's more a state of being. Purity is more a condition. In fact, in the Beatitudes, Jesus said, blessed are the pure in spirit, pure in heart, for they shall see God. Pure in heart didn't just mean morally pure. It meant pure in thoughts as well. The heart, as we said over and over again, was the place where you made your inmost decisions. So to be pure-hearted was to make those kinds of decisions as if God were making them and making them for you. So it's a state of being and a condition of the heart and the mind through both personal encounter with God and personal and corporate worship that understands who God is. And because of who God is, then we should be pure. Not only in the Old Testament, but in the book of James, and also in Peter. 1 Peter, we're told, you shall be holy, for I am holy. That is, if you're a child of God, we're to be holy because God is holy. And so then we come to this section, verses 4 through 6 of chapter 24 of Psalms, which is really, this was meant for worship. It was a call to confession and commitment, this particular prayer. Oftentimes, the Levites would ask the question when this was used in the temple. The Levites, those who helped the priests, and sometimes there'd be a Levitical choir, and they would sing the question, who may ascend the hill of the Lord? Who may stand in his holy place? The congregation would then answer. And what is that answer? What's the answer? Yes, clean hands and a pure heart. Who shall ascend to the Lord? We're to examine our hearts before going to worship. That is who we actually are. Clean hands symbolize what? Yes, actions. Clean hands symbolize action. And not just any action, but proper action. Right action. Innocence of action. In other words, to seek to live and to act without doing wrong, without doing harm. That's a difficult order. It's a tall order. But that is what we're supposed to seek to do. Clean hands. Ethical living per the law. A pure heart. You know, you said clean hands and a pure heart. What's a pure heart represent? Already talked about it a little bit. You love your mind, your attitude, the right decisions that you make, the way you think them through. Those right attitudes, an innocence of thought, a sense of purpose in such a way that it comes forth in action. Comes forth in action. So it's beyond the letter of the law. But there's also another, there are two other qualifiers to this. You know, we very readily say clean hands and a pure heart. But what else does the psalmist say here? Okay. Somebody who does not lift their soul to an idol. That's the third one. And the fourth one is who does not swear by what is false. Okay. Does not lift up his soul to an idol. Doesn't place his trust in anything that's transitory. Anything that would seek to take the place of God. Now, I know people don't do that these days. Well, you know, you should love the Lord your God first and only. But, you know, I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. You should have no other gods before me. But the danger is, I mean, and we, as we've said before, we could literally say, okay, well, I'm going to love God first, but then number two is going to be my job, and number three is going to be that great German God, Mercedes, or maybe it's the Bavarian God, BMW, or whatever, or maybe it's the vet. And then, you know, another and another and another. Even the Bible could be in that list of things that it worshipped. Bibliolatry. But what happens when you do that? There comes a point in time where all of a sudden God slips to second and the job jumps up to number one. And then the next thing you know, God slips to third and number three jumps up above. And in the Hebrew, the word actually means both before and besides. And so that commandment is actually, you shall have no other gods before or besides me. In other words, God is to be the first, and God is to be the only. So not lifting up our soul. The soul is the entire being. We've talked about that in the book of Deuteronomy. Now, the Bible study, the soul is the entire being, all of who we are. We don't count on transitory things to get us through. When we do, we become more susceptible to, and we're not even talking about sexual impurity here, but to impure thoughts and impure actions. And all that kind of stuff, where that becomes more important. And then the one who does not swear falsely, that is, misuse God's name or be deceptive. In other words, we use right words, proper words. If one swears falsely, especially in the name of God, what are you asking God to do? You're asking the God of truth to lie for you. That's right. To lie for you. And that is using God's name falsely, swearing falsely. As I have said on numerous occasions, one of my former professors in seminary, Rick Spencer, we were talking one day about the Ten Commandments in class, and he said, Christians, the greatest way that a Christian can use God's name in vain is to claim to be a Christian and not live like it. So, the psalmist indicates to us, and the lesson writer, that worship of God, proper worship of God and understanding of God and connection with God is the foundation for living a life of purity. Not just sexual purity, but a life of purity, period. And verses 5 and 6 give us what some people call the rewards. In fact, I think might be in your book. Let's see. Yes. The reward for seeking God with a pure heart, last paragraph, and clean hands was God's blessing and vindication. I understand the use of reward, bless you, but I think probably results might be a better word. The results of doing this, because we look for the carrot or the stick, right? I have to explain that more and more these days to young people because they've never heard of the carrot and the stick. But instead of rewards, hey, I'm going to do it for my reward, we live this way and the result is this. Not that we're looking for stars in the crown or any of that kind of stuff, but we're doing it because of God and because of that relationship, because of God's holiness and call to purity. And then the results of living that way happen to be this. The results or the consequences happen to be blessing from the Lord. He will receive blessing from the Lord. That blessing in the Old Testament was both material and spiritual. They really expected material blessing as well in many parts of Israel's history, because quite frankly, for a lot of Israel's history, they didn't have a whole lot. Everybody else around them had it. Everybody else took it from them. They didn't have a whole lot. But it was a situation. I didn't need that elbow. It was a situation where I always have some of those in my pocket. Now the next time you'll need one, it'll be the one time I don't. But material and spiritual well-being and vindication from God, his Savior. The word translated here, vindication, does mean vindication. But more often, tzedakah in Hebrew is translated righteousness, justice, prosperity. His righteousness. He will receive righteousness from God, or justice from God, or prosperity from God. Though most of the time we translate it vindication. In other words, fulfillment of God's promises because of that proper relationship. Such is the generation of those who seek Him, who seek Your face, O God of Jacob. So that's the result of this kind of action based on, and it's not just a sense of being, but it's also a sense of acting in worship. Then we come to Ephesians chapter 5 in talking about purity. Chapter 5, verses 1 through 6, how to live in an impure world. Well, that's kind of tough, right? We're bombarded all over the place. Of course, kids are bombarded with it. Young people are bombarded with it. Adults are bombarded with it. In a lot more ways than we were growing up. But we still, if you think about it, there were still those opportunities that were out there. So here, the Apostle Paul, picking up on this theme in Ephesus. Ephesus was not only the center of the worship of Artemis, but also Artemis is also which? Diana as well. Okay? So it's a goddess. Artemis. And her temple was one of the seven ancient wonders of the world. People flocked to it, hoping to get special favors from Artemis. And by the way, with that pagan influence and the cult of Artemis, there was temple prostitution that took place as well. And so he calls Christians to separate themselves. By the way, in the city of Ephesus, you could also buy some very fine idols, many of those dedicated to Artemis. And so Paul's calling the church here to do what? Go ahead, Sandy. No. Okay, to be imitators of God. That is, in doing what is right, in living what is right, and in maintaining pure hearts and clean lives in a situation where it's awfully tough to maintain pure hearts and clean lives. Here he says, you know, be imitators of God as dearly loved children and live a life of love just as Christ loved and gave himself. Okay, so Jesus is the example that we are to follow, obviously, and his sacrificial love. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean, and he wasn't necessarily telling them, that means you need to go out and throw yourself on a cross. But it was sacrificial from the standpoint of not living like the rest of the world lived, but living lives of purity, lives that were in more connection with God, being an example that, hey, in the middle of all this stuff, you can live this way. You don't have to give in. And trust me, I know y'all know that that's hard. It's tough. It's tough. And sometimes we can be so sheltered that when we get out of the shelter, the radioactivity around us gets us. I can't help but think of, Mary has a friend whose son married a young woman who went through the Bijou Elementary and High School and started at Bob Jones in college, but eventually got kicked out. She's a little bit too rambunctious. But the dad worked in maintenance, and he used to talk about when they'd go to pull the mattresses at the end of the semester, the spring semester, and store them for the summer, that you wouldn't believe the number of them that on the side next to the wall had been split and it was filled with empty beer bottles and beer cans. Even in the sheltered place, the radioactivity got there. And so he says, you know, it's tough to live that kind of life, even when you've been sheltered, and then at some point in time you come out of the shelter, right? And so it's much more important to work at being, at sacrificing what the rest of the world might want you to do. But peer pressure is tough. Peer pressure is not especially tough on kids, but you know, I found that peer pressure can be tough for adults too. Especially in certain aspects of work, and if you're going to get ahead, you got to socialize with these folks, and you got to do these kinds of things. So it's there. Don't you want to provide for your family? Well, you can provide better if you go and you hang out with this group, and those kinds of things. So it's not something that we're immune to the temptation. It's a matter of whether we give in or not, and how we work at that. What are some of the sins of self-indulgence that he mentioned here? Greed. What? Obscenity, obscene and foolish talk, sins of speech. Sexual immorality. Immortality. I think that's what some of those folks are trying to attain. Sexual immorality, impurity, greedy person. Be sure, no immoral, impure, or greedy person, such a man as an idolater, has an inheritance of the kingdom. Interestingly enough, the word used here for impurity, sexual impurity, immorality, these words come from the Greek word porneia. Porneia. You can probably guess pretty quickly what we get from that. Yes, pornography. Porneia. Porneia means immorality. Immorality. And you know, sometimes it's translated, well, here, and when it says there must not even be a hint of sexual immorality, the word is porneia. Immorality. But there was so much sexual immorality that went on, still does, I got to do is watch the commercials or watch the news, that kind of stuff. That, you know, that, but it was considered a form of idolatry too. Sexual immorality was a form of idolatry. Greed was a form of idolatry, because you end up worshiping that object or that situation. And so here he calls us and encourages not to be involved in such a way in the world. You know, Paul attempted to strengthen the Christian church at Ephesus by calling their attention to this, by calling their attention to the fact that they were in the middle of a strong pagan influence. Now, I know we don't have any pagan influences these days. Mary and I were, and I didn't even look it up because I've heard about it before. Mary and I were coming back from Jamaica, and we were waiting in the airport. At least this time that we went, this was the second time we've ever gone, we could eat beef and stuff. First time we said we wanted, and stayed in that condo, we said we wanted to eat like Jamaicans. I think, and I know I've told y'all before, out of 21 meals, we had two that were chicken, one was pork, and every other meal, including breakfast, we had fish and ackee. Fish and ackee. Boiled fish, primarily. It was codfish, but fish and ackee. After a week, you kind of get tired of fish. First thing we did when we went to the airport that time was, after we checked in, we went and said, okay, where's the Margaritaville? I want a cheeseburger. but we were waiting to get on the plane, and there were these two people there, and they had on the T-shirts, and they were talking with some other folks about what a great time it was. Hedonism 2. There was a festival called Hedonism number 2. And they just kept going on and on to these people about just how, you know, anything you wanted to do, you were free to do. No strings attached. No bad feelings attached. I'm thinking, well, you just wait one day. But, you know, and that's kind of how it was in Ephesus as well, in much of the ancient world. And unfortunately, there was a fear, because in Ephesus, in the Ephesian church, most of the converts were from pagan religions. Whether it was the cult of Isis, cult of Artemis, Zeus, Hermes, Apollo, all these different groups, Dionysus. I don't know if, the movie with Aykroyd, Dragnet. I don't know if any of y'all ever saw that spoof on Dragnet or not. And the whole hedonistic kind of thing, kind of like that. And, you know, that was going on. And so Paul was afraid that some people were going to try and bring that into the church. In fact, he deals with that in Ephesians. He also deals with it in 1 Thessalonians, the first letter he wrote. He wanted to make sure that the Christian church didn't bring those things in. As I mentioned today, recently, we were talking about different things at the deacons' meeting, and I said, "Well, you know, we're not going to be like the church that I read about recently. That's going to start serving beer at their worship services so they can bring in a larger crowd." Seriously, that was in the news recently. What? They've moved beyond selling their Starbucks, but taking our belief system and melding it to what the world system around wants. And that's where we end up with impurity as well, when the society becomes the greater influence on the church. Whether that's sexual immorality, pornography, substance abuses, or anything else, it's when the society becomes more of an influence on the church than the other way around, where impurity enters. Impurity of worship. Jimmy, you look like you were getting ready to say something. Well, I missed that one, but some of the Episcopal churches are splitting off from the group that did that. But every major denomination is having to deal with those questions and those issues, and it's really a dangerous trap in which to step. Very dangerous trap in which to step. I did a wedding a year or so ago, and the couple asked me specifically to, instead of saying, because just kind of generically over the years it's gone, two people who love each other and committing themselves to this marriage, da da da. They said, could you please say a man and a woman, because one of the relatives of one of the people getting married is in the gay lesbian community, and they wanted it to be a distinctive statement because they knew that person was going to be there. So I said, sure. More and more colleges are putting up stickers. I've been on two or three different college campuses in the last year for various things, and this, you can walk by and there's stickers on there itself that say LGBT safe zone, on certain office doors and that kind of stuff. So, but it's when we allow society to become more of an influence on the church that we are involved in impure worship, because that, the worship, regardless of what the issue is, the worship that God calls us to is something different from society, being distinct from society. To have a holy attitude with morals and values which we get from God, as opposed to otherwise. Some of the questions here we've dealt with. I guess the final question is, number five, what does purity look like in the 21st century, and has it changed from previous eras? Has it really changed what is considered purity? Oh, but I hear that all the time.
I said you can't do that.
Oh, I know.
I hear it all
I hear it all the time.
Well, it's not so big deal these days.
I don't think there's a change, really. But I think there is a more modern facade that's going to have to be.
You use a Corvette instead of a chariot.
Well, purity, from the perspective of the biblical text and from the perspective of God's call, hasn't changed. It hasn't changed. And quite frankly, human beings challenge to that sense of purity and stretching the boundaries and the limits as far as they can, pushing as far as they can, really hasn't changed, because there are people who push those. And yet, we're called by God to live sacrificial lives, sacrificing, everybody's doing it so, in order to stand differently and to be more of an example of what God intends for humanity to be. And the changes that come as a result of that are small, and one life at a time. But that one life can touch another life, which can touch another life, which can touch another life. One of the really important things for you and me is not to get so discouraged because we feel like we're drowning that we give up. And when we don't give up, then we're standing for that sense of purity of worship and connection with God, even though we too fall and fail. Anyone else? I thought we were going to finish at 9:45, and it's 9:50. If not, then we will Next week we'll talk about service. Serving as we gather together. Thank you. Have a good evening. Cover those tender plants. I understand it's going to be 30 tonight. God bless you and go in peace. Amen.